I did a lot of quote-unquote rule breaking.
If they had to get the baby out quick, you wouldn't be offered an induction, you would be offered a cesarean.
Yeah. Like, why should I?
You know, it's really hard as a first-time mum.
Anyway, I felt so bullied by the system.
Why are we talking about sweeps at 35, 36 weeks?
And this time around, I felt more informed and more confident in my choices.
People will resonate with how you felt. Maybe it'll get a bit mosh, maybe it'll get a bit deep.
I didn't have enough time to mentally understand what my body was trying to do.
So if a baby wants to be born in its waters, there's probably a reason why.
Back again for episode 3. I'm going to stop counting these episodes, or maybe I should keep going because it's quite nice to know how far we've come. We're going to keep counting them?
I think so for now, certainly for the first season, episode 3. I think, as you know, two mums just out here doing it.
Yeah.
Oh. Doing what we want to do.
We're three eps deep, people. You know? Three eps.
We're three episodes deep. Yes. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Third date vibes. Here we go.
Oh, hello. But yeah, welcome back. Like, hopefully now you would have listened to at least, you know, number one or two, or maybe even both if you're a diehard fan,
yes,
which is hopefully what we're creating over here.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, then you're going to have to go back and have a listen to those too, because we can't keep repeating ourselves.
Amen.
But yeah, we are back for our third episode, and today is going to be a really, really good one. I don't know, maybe it'll get a bit mosh, maybe it'll get a bit deep, I don't know. But as we mentioned in last week's episode, we are going to be talking about Khadija's birth story slash stories. I think Khadija has a really unique perspective in the fact that she has obviously, I say unique, I know many people have birthed two children, but for us, it's the first time that we're talking about birth, you know, our specific birth stories. And certainly as I've only birthed one child,
yeah.
You know, it is going to provide that different experience. So very, very keen to hear all the juiciness that you went through both times and kind of what you've taken from that and learned, and what might be helpful for our mamas or mamas to be listening, going through it either the first or second time, or even third or fourth, if they're, you know, that brave. So I think there's going to be a lot of value in today's episode. I'm certainly very excited.
Ooh, no pressure, Hans. No pressure.
I know,
pressure.
But this is like, this is my doula vibes coming out. This is what I live and breathe, guys. I love talking about birth. And I'm, yeah, especially as I didn't know Khadija during her first pregnancy journey.
True.
Yeah, it's going to be, yeah, just a really great episode. So if you are interested in listening to that, then definitely stay tuned. But as you know by now, this is a time where we play Win or Wing of the Week, and it is the first time I have said it correctly,
yay!
So it's going to be a good one. This is our weekly game where we get into the wins or winging of motherhood. So why don't you kick us off then with your Win or Wing of the Week, babe? Go.
Oh, this week we are going for, drum roll everyone, the royal toilet training, no more nappy, has begun. The Roman household has commenced in no more nappies, here we go. It's definitely something I've put off because I was like, I'm pregnant, I'm tired, I can't be bothered. He's probably been ready for it for a while. Well, in my opinion, ready for it for a while. He's using the toilet at nursery and the potty at nursery like every now when he fancies it. So I just thought, do you know what? It's February. It's half term. Not that means anything to me because every day is half term. But it's half term.
Yeah.
Let's take the plunge. So we have dived in with 2 feet. Newborn over here, weeing over here, poo in the middle, a toilet, flushable baby wipes, and a hell of a lot of washing and heating has been consumed. But
from
we're
the,
doing it.
You know, good. I think this is such a scary phase of and you're doing it with a newborn. I'm not saying you're finding it scary. I certainly felt like, oh my goodness, like, what is this gonna hold? Like, how do you know when they're ready? What do you, and I think it's also something that is talked about as like, yeah, they're potty trained. I personally don't think that. I think that, yes, they become potty trained, but like I was saying to you the other day, babe, I was like, actually, it's, you know, Master Jay has been potty trained for a good few months now, but potty trained, I'm using my fingers. He doesn't wee. Like, he is, he wears pants. But I feel like it's more...
It's more than that.
Almost.
Yeah.
It is. It's not just about getting them potty trained. It's about, like, the then constant reminders or the things like that down the line. So, and I know, we obviously know every child is different and, you know, everyone does it in their own time. But I think, yeah, given you've also got the newborn, whew, what a task.
I don't know what I thought I was taking on. It's definitely been slightly more... intense is the word I would use, trying to do both, particularly because, like you said, you don't know when they're going to wee. And so that element of, I don't feel like I've actually sat down for the week because A, I'm trying not to sit on the sofa so he doesn't sit on the sofa, but also, like, she's going to cry any second, he's going to shit everywhere any second. And I'm like,
running around. I just remember like running around with the potty, like to Master Jay, to be like, ah, come on, quickly.
Yesterday I was on the phone to my mum.
But it is a phase.
And he weed down my leg and I was like, something is warm. Where's the warm thing? He was weeding down my leg. Anyway, he's done so well and Renee has done so well to be patient with him. And it's definitely a process. I was in the park last week and this dad said to this maybe 3-year-old, oh, but I asked you if you wanted to go to the toilet before we left. You should have gone then. And I looked at him and thought, but I'm an adult and I went to the toilet before I left and I still need a wee. Like, I don't think you can just empty your bladder before you go somewhere and then not need to wee until you get home.
I know. But you know what? As a mum, that I know we're at different phases of our potty training journey. As a mum that has done this now for a bit of time, I could imagine myself saying something like this to Master Jay. Like, right or wrong, I don't know if that's right or wrong. And it's a gentle parenting slash not gentle parenting slash just trying to survive parenting thing. It's very annoying. Like, it's very annoying, which is why in our house, we try. We sit on the toilet or the potty, whatever. Before we go out, we try.
Yeah.
And then if it doesn't come, it's fine. It doesn't come. We just sat and had a nice chat. That's how I phrase it to him. But then, when I get to the park, I'm offering the potty. And that, my carry potty, the best £30 investment I have ever done. I'm
Shout
sure there are cheaper ones around.
Yeah.
But it is, it was, I put off doing it for so long. But it's perfect, even now. And I'm not afraid to admit, when we drove, this is shameful, shameful. When we drove to Devon, I really needed a wee.
Oh,
and we
God.
Couldn't stop.
Oh,
so
God.
I used Master Jay's travel potty.
You're lying.
It was shameful. I can't believe I've just said that.
It's not shameful. It's not shameful. It's brilliant. It's absolutely so like fantastic. You are
it
so
comes
red.
In use
but
for you too,
bloody hell. I mean, people have peed in wood, I think, so, you know.
Oh, my God, I'm hot now.
That is hilarious.
Well, back to you. Well done. Yeah. And I'm glad you also have my carry potty because it's definitely going to come in useful for you as well.
Do you know
well
what? I'm actually, to anybody, I'm sure we'll do an episode on potty training at some point or using a toilet, but I'm actually using the carry potty as my toilet at the moment because I started off taking him into the bathroom to sit on the toilet seat on the toilet, but actually having a newborn and trying to go in the toilet when he's dead is just too much. So we're actually just weeing in the carry potty in the living room in a like
wherever
in a toilet area because that's what works for me. Anyway,
that's exactly what we did.
Well
done.
Yeah,
well
let's done. Go to your wing or win. What are you winging this week?
Can't believe I just said that. If we'd done an episode, then that would have been winging. Oh my lord! Right. Okay. Anyway,
she weed in the car in the carry potty.
Ground yourself, Alexandra. Ground yourself. So I am going to. I don't know if this is a win or a wing. I think it's a bit of both, actually, from my side. It's about me adapting to like a new routine, a new phase of life. So as you know, and I don't know, some of our listeners might know as well, my partner Jay was off work for some time and he has recently gone back to work. So I've been used to having him around for a lot. He's, you know, very involved in like the house life, you know, doing stuff. And I always just said like, when he goes back to work, you know, I am a stay-at-home mum and I'm happy to oblige to certain duties that may, you know, fall under that umbrella as a, you know, essentially a housewife. And, you know, I've never been one to, I guess, hide away from the fact previously that I've not really done much of the cooking. Yes, yeah. I know, really bad, even though I'm a stay-at-home mum. I don't cook. Not really done much of the cleaning. I know, really bad, I'm a stay-at-home mum. You know what? I found looking after Master Jay all-consuming, and for a certain period of time, that was all I focused on. And, you know, Jay came home from work. He was happy to cook. He enjoyed it. And I would put Master Jay to bed, or sometimes I would cook and he would do the bedtime, whatever.
Yeah.
Swap it. But I said to myself, when he goes back to work, I really want to just find a new routine for myself now that I've got a couple of weeks, a couple of days of, you know, Master Jay being at forest school. Mm-hmm. I can find like a rhythm of making sure that, you know, the household can run a little bit more efficiently perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been adapting and I've, you know, I'm enjoying it, finding my feet in my new rhythm. Making sure the house is in a nice way for when Jay comes home, so that the evening can just run a bit smoother and we actually have time together, as opposed to, you know, him standing washing up or me doing this. Like, it's already done before he gets home, so then we can actually just chat, or we can, you know, sit and talk, or we can, you know, get busy, whatever you want to, however we want to use the evening, we have time for that now. You know, whereas, you know, when we talk, Jay and I talk quite openly, like, a lot of the times we don't even have time or the energy to actually do anything in the evening because we're still just going through the motions of life. So I thought, I'm actually really enjoying this new, like, routine vibe, and it's not like 100%, and I was obviously saying to you, you know, aside from the podcast, like, there's just so much to get done, like, in a day, especially on the 2 days where I don't have Master Jay, but it's fine. We're working through it. And I feel like that is a bit of a win, and it is a bit of a wing, because I am kind of winging it as well. But I'm liking the results on, you know, the positive effects on my relationship, how I feel about my home. So, yeah, I feel like that is something I wanted to bring to the table today.
Ta-da! I think that's a really good one. I think it's important to sort of remind ourselves and the listeners that it is important to take time for yourselves and for your relationship, and the kitchen, as much as you have cleaned it 100 times, is never clean. But, you know, sometimes you've got to let the kitchen be
the kitchen thing.
You know,
exactly right. And it's all a phase, like, I'm in my new phase now, and I'm still you know, 2 years and what, a few months into motherhood, and I've only just been able to say quite confidently, okay, yeah, I kind of got this going down now. Like, some people get it back very quickly, some people probably never do. It's just adapting and knowing that, you know, it's okay to move into new phases, you know.
Absolutely. So, staying stagnant is boring. But yes, I love your wing and your win of this week.
So, let's get into it. Khadija, you, a mum of two, a little boy, a baby girl.
Baby.
And we're going to talk about your, I guess, your pregnancy and birth stories, with a bit of a specific focus on the births themselves. And we touched on it last week about how you approached your second birth was quite different to how you approached your first pregnancy and birth. So I wondered, why don't we, you know, get into it with that this week. Let's start by talking about maybe how you approached your first birth and put a bit of color on that for us.
I think firstly, as a first time mum, similarly to you, I'm not the biggest fan of medicine, and I'm not the biggest fan of maybe in some ways being told what to do. So I suppose in some of the ways midwives were like, you should do this and you should do that. When you have a baby, you should do this and you should do that. I was like, well, why should I? Unless there's like some factual, evidential reason why I should do Z, I don't want to do that. Or I do want to do it. And so I think, to caveat my both pregnancies, I did a lot of quote unquote rule breaking because I didn't do the vanilla road to birth, I guess. I just kind of did what I felt was in my comfort zone and what I felt was right for my body and for my baby, which to some people listening might sound slightly bizarre because first time around, I've never done it before. So how do you know what's right? And how do you know like your body? And how do you know your baby? But I don't know, you might say the same. I feel like you just do. Like you just, I don't know, you just know.
I think there's an element of intuition that we all have when you become pregnant. I think a lot of people relate to the fact that, you do have an element of intuition.
Mm.
I think my professional and personal opinion too is that actually our intuition has been eroded somewhat by the system. And when I'm talking about the system, I'm talking about our trust, our NHS system.
Yeah.
And I mentioned it before, this isn't me bashing, you know, the people that work within that system, but ultimately it is a business. There are certain things that have to be done in their eyes, have to be done within certain time scales, because that manages staffing levels, that manages the amount of money that they make as a hospital, profits. That is, unfortunately, when you get down to it, that is that's what's important to a hospital. And that is not to say that the midwives within that system do not care about you. I believe many of them are very good people. However, given the way that birth works now, and I say it as that birth works now, because we are, you are, if you're a woman about to birth your child, you are birthing in a system whereby inductions and cesarean births are higher than physiological births.
Yeah.
Most midwives, especially the younger, the newer, the early midwives coming through the system now, they have never seen a truly physiological birth. And by that, I mean a woman going into labour naturally and birthing her child.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Have I said that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
sure. Because so much of our birth now starts with inductions.
Mm.
And most first-time mums don't know that even a sweep is a form of induction. And most women are offered sweeps at 38 weeks, which blows my mind.
I think actually on that point, I thought that sweeps were like the next step. So you know, like you go through the you are offered to be weighed, you are offered to have a scan, you are offered to have these things. If you'd have asked me as a first-time mum what the steps are to then birthing a baby, I would have said when you get to 35 weeks, I think I'd have said the next step, if you don't see a baby, is a sweep. But that's my naivety talking. I was uneducated then.
Don't say it like that. It's not uneducated. It's a massive concern for us that was your belief. It's so ingrained now that you just have a sweep.
I mean, I didn't give into it. I didn't give into it the first time I was offered it, but I did feel that I was taking a sidestep by politely declining when they offered me it. And they were very much like, what do you mean you don't want one? I was like, well, I don't. What do I need one for?
Yeah.
And it was sort of like I was declining the chocolate and people were like, well, why not? Like, you like chocolate, eat it. And I was like, well, I don't particularly want or need it. So, yeah, I did have a sweep both times, actually. And I had multiple sweeps. Interestingly, first time around, I had multiple sweeps because I was 40. I had Roman at 41 and 5. And by maybe 36 weeks, they were like, right, he's cooked now. He can come out. Off we go. Let's get him out. Why is my honest answer? Because what? He's having a great time in there. He doesn't need to come out. He's not ready to come out. My body's not saying he should come out. Anyway, I felt so bullied by the system that I had three sweeps, because you can have one, I believe, every 24 hours or every 48 hours. Anyway, whatever the rule is, I did it because I was like, if I don't get this baby out, the system is going to do something to me that I don't want to happen. And I don't know if I know the right way to say no, thank you.
Yeah. So with that in mind, did you have a basis of knowledge going into birth? So like, for example, you said around, you thought kind of having a sweep was just like, you know, the next step that came along at some point. How much, maybe that's a better question, of like, how much research did you do into birth ahead of time for the first time round?
So I read Holly de Cruz's Your Baby, Your Birth book. And that gave me a lot of knowledge, and I looked at a lot of Instagram in social media. I don't know how people birth before social media. I looked at a lot of social media to try and see myths that, like, you should birth on your back, you shouldn't birth on your back, your pelvis does this, your pelvis doesn't do this, you should have candles, you shouldn't have candles, la 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 la. And I'm also quite a spiritual person, and I. I'm also not very, again, I said I'm not into medicine. I'm not really that drug heavy. So I wasn't, some people I've spoken to have been like, yes, can't wait for that epidural. Yes, get me the gas and air. And it, part of it is like, when you have a baby, you have gas and air. When you have a baby, you have an epidural. That kind of thinking. I was the opposite in the sense that I was like, do you know what? I'd like to support my body in. So I saw pregnancy as two things. Me supporting my body in growing a human, and then when my body was ready, it was going to give me that baby to then support the baby's growth. So I tried throughout my entire pregnancy to do everything I could to just support my body, like you would an old person or a child or somebody else, to grow that human. And then I was like, right, when it comes to birthing it, what can I do to support birthing that baby? See how I corrected myself from last week? Ding ding. So yeah, I just thought I'd like this to be as natural as possible. I'd like, and that by natural I mean I'd like to not have as many drugs. I'd like to be as compos mentis as possible, and I'd like to put as less pressure on my baby as I think I can by not doing the systems forcing me to do X, Y, and Z. Don't know if I phrased that very
So with
well.
that in mind, I get the place that you were coming from, but also from what you said before, you kind of mentioned around, you'd been offered a sweep and you didn't like know that that was necessarily an induction, which is considered induction, even though it's not medical, it's a physical aspect of having an induction. You obviously went on to then have those inductions. Did you know at that point, or when you chose to have that, did you were you purely doing it to follow the system, as you kind of alluded to before, and follow what you were being told to do, or were you told of the risks and the benefits? Was that kind of mentioned to you, and how did it come about that you then kind of agreed to having that
So
induction of labour?
with Roman, I use the term strongly. I was bullied into having an induction because with Roman, I was told from 36 weeks every week that if I didn't do an induction, or if I didn't have X or Y, I would be encouraging more chance of stillbirth, more chance of birth defects. Like, I was listed the facts, and I get that. Medical professionals have to give the facts because that's how they protect themselves. But those constant repetitions of negative facts then led me to make a decision that I, in hindsight, don't feel I should have made, but felt I had no other choice. And
Because of the facts you were being
yeah,
presented
and at
with.
some point you do have to sort of say, I can stand up for myself, but I haven't done this before. And there does come a point where you sort of think, okay, I do have to
Maybe.
start listening to somebody at some, like, maybe I should do what they're telling me because maybe there is science in what they're saying, and maybe I should, listen to what I'm being told to do. So with Roman, I crossed my legs as tight as I could till 41 weeks, and then they started to sort of say every day this, that, and the other. And I sort of said, I'm not comfortable with those. I just went in for regular monitoring. And in the end, after my third swab, I was like 3.5 centimeters dilated. And my understanding was that you have to be four to be in active labour. So I was like, I know if I can get to
Considered,
four, they'll
into
leave me
that.
alone. And
Even that is,
so in the end, I had to have half a pessary. Which is a little tablet that they insert into you and it dissolves, I think, is my understanding. Crazy that I have an understanding when it happened to me. Anyway, because I took that pessary, I had a very, very quick delivery of Roman.
Just saying the pessary contains the hormone, I'm keeping it simple, but contains the hormone that would be found in semen.
Right.
Or and that is meant to kind of bring on labor, which is why one of those, natural induction ways that is mentioned is around having sex and making sure that you get semen, you know, it helps ripen the cervix.
So, yeah.
You know, our bodies do kind of work together. But I think I'm just going to touch on a couple of things for our listeners, because obviously you've mentioned there, like, you had to have, in this moment when you were going through this, and this is your experience, this is how you felt, that you had to have this.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just calling it out for the language, and because we're here to try and explain and to tell our, you know, spread the word, you know what we're trying to do here, that that feeling that you had in that moment of you had to, you know, have the sweeps, you had to have the pessary, these are obviously all choices that can be made. But I think a lot of people will resonate with how you felt.
Yeah.
Certainly if you birthed before, in the fact that you feel like at some point, gosh, I'm going to, how long can I keep standing my ground? Because you start to doubt yourself, right? You start to doubt what you know. You start to wonder, like, can I actually do this? So I'm just calling this out because I think it's a really, really important and a very, very common experience that I've certainly found with many women, is that they kind of felt like they're just following the white coats. You know, we just follow what we're told, because at the end of the day, when you're being badgered or you're being told, and I'm going to, you know, do my little fingers, facts, I would question the facts that you were told from 36 weeks. Why are we talking about sweeps at 35, 36 weeks?
Like,
this is absolutely not even giving our babies and our bodies a chance to, you know, go into labour naturally.
Yeah.
Like, why and where did we lose our way to let women, you know, go into labour naturally? And so, yeah, I think it's just an important thing that, you know, you obviously, you know, went on that journey that you went on to having multiple sweeps and then having the pessary, but this was kind of under duress, you know, to an extent, as you said, you felt bullied by things at that time, and you lost your confidence or you know, were doubting yourself. So you said that that led to a very, very speedy birth then.
Yeah.
With
so
Brandon.
I, again, in my first time mum naivety, had assumed that quick deliveries, if there is such a thing, are like 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. And when I say quick birth, Khadija, come on, correct yourself. Quick birth are 4 to 8 hours. And from that, I mean, from when you're Alexandra, is active labour when you're pushing?
No. No, that's after transition. Your active labour is from like 4 to 5 centimetres. Your body is working to push the baby down and out.
Okay. Well, see, again, because I had so many interventions, I only know from my water breaking to Roman being on the delivery table, on the birthing table.
It was
an hour and 40 minutes.
Incredibly quick, yeah.
And that is incredibly quick. And so the issue with that was, one, I then tore because naturally my body didn't have enough time to A, brace itself for what it was doing, or B, get ready. And C, I didn't have enough time to mentally understand what my body was trying to do. So I have no birth trauma. I think, if anything, I have trauma from being forced into birthing my child so unwillingly. However, I do think there is a negative in being unaware that you can birth so fast. There was no point in my mind did I ever think that I could have a baby that quickly. No way.
But this is something that should have been explained as part of, you know, the benefits and the risks of accepting sweeps and, you know, pessaries and things like that, because it's very unlikely, if you had no interventions that would happen that quickly.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately putting a pessary in, and don't even get me started on the oxytocin drip, you are, you know, ultimately rushing baby along. Now, the fact that it happened so quickly for you, you could say, or some people might say, oh, well, maybe your baby was, you're kind of ready to be born. You know, some inductions can take, you know, days. And this is why I say, you know, when people talk about, oh, my gosh, like, I'm, you know, kind of was in a bad situation. And, you know, they said I need to get baby up quick. So I had to have an induction. I'm like, if they had to get the baby out quick, you wouldn't be offered an induction. You would be offered a cesarean. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because inductions can take days. And often, you know, they stop start inductions, which is terrible. And that has had a detrimental impact on women. But back to your story, who knows? Who knows what would happen? Because maybe the sweeps did enough and you didn't need the pessary. Why did you take the in a judgmental way, but like, why was that put on you then? You know, you can say yes to some parts of intervention and no to others. Just because you accepted sweeps didn't mean you have to accept the pessary or go on to drip or whatever. And I think that's the thing. When you accept an induction in your example, you don't have to have it all. You can just have a bit if that's what you want.
But that's essentially also,
who would have known what would have happened if you didn't have the... Roman may have come on his own in the next week anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's partly why second time around, again, being more informed, like I said in last week's episode, I didn't have as much intervention the second time around. I was offered various different interventions because your hind water and your fore water or something like that.
Yeah, that's what's often talked about.
Yeah, so like some kind of water started breaking, but not the water that was essentially above Renee's head round two. So I then was offered by the system various different options as to how to quickly get that baby out before they got an infection and something detrimental happened. And this time around, I felt more informed and more confident in my choices, and so therefore politely declined the induction methods offered to me. And instead I said, well, how about in 4 hours we think about that? How about we leave me for a minute, and in 4 hours, if nothing's happened or if this has happened, then maybe we can think about this. Instead of just saying, yeah, go on then, like, I've got no choice and give me it all. So with Renee, because my waters had broken, they said you have X amount of hours for your water to have properly break for you to be in active labour. Otherwise, we're going to give you the oxytocin drip and we'd like to do monitoring and we'd like to do all of these things. So come back to the hospital and we can give you the oxytocin drip. So when I came back to hospital, I said, no, thank you. I really don't want that oxytocin drip. How about we give me 4 hours, and if in 4 hours nothing's happened, let's regroup. And guess what? 2 paracetamol and a TENS machine later, 2 hours, she was on the floor. So had I taken that oxytocin drip, who knows what my birth had been like, but I had a really breezy, really calm, she just glided out onto the floor. I asked that they take the bed out of the room. I asked they take the chair out of the room. I just wanted a mat on the floor, a birthing stool and some fake candles. We listened to some music. I had a birthing ball. And in comparison to my first birth with Roman, who I didn't even birth in a delivery room because I didn't have the time to get to the delivery room, I birthed him like on the edge of a bed. This time round, I had all the bells and whistles without the induction that they insisted I needed. And 2 hours later, there she was.
And I think this is actually a very... you did an incredible job there as well, because to have the guts and the courage to say, I'm actually okay to wait for another X amount of time. I think this is one of the most valuable tools you can have as a birthing person or as a birthing partner, is to say, okay, thank you. We're going to take some time to think about that. And come back to me in 4 hours. Because often, more often than not, the example of your water's breaking, like when you say that to me, it just makes me shudder, because I'm like, the fact that they're even saying, we'll know kind of that you're in established or active labour, whatever you want to call it, by the fact that your other waters have broken. I mean, no, that doesn't mean that. That factually does not mean that. Many people, and while it's not as common, many people birth their babies in their waters and, they have an on-call birth. And you have to think about it, right? Like, your body and your baby, they're at one, right? They're designed to work together. So if a baby wants to be born in its waters, there's probably a reason why. Actually, the waters lubricate your insides, they lubricate the vaginal canal. Maybe that's why, you know, baby wanted to be in, you know, waters of some sort, because they were in not the right position and they were maneuvering and stuff. And it's like, when we have so many interventions, we're interrupting all of those things, that's why we end up, you know, putting the stress on baby and on us. Like, oh, well, the heart rate was spiking. Oh my gosh, we need to go and have an emergency C-section now. Well, the baby wasn't recovering properly. His heart rate spiked, you know, this. We created that problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not, and I know that might sound hard for some people to hear that have experienced an induction of labor and you were told exactly what I just said. I'm sorry. It's a very common thing that happens. But we created that because we are, you know, following these things, and it's not a judgment. It's a situation that happens. And like you said, you were more informed in your story for the second time round, and you did things slightly differently. And it's okay to accept certain things and not accept other things, of which, you know, then led to your, oops, you know, wonderful birth with Renee.
Yeah, I think also to your point, it was down to the midwife, and I have to shout out Shannon from St. Helier Hospital, woohoo for Shannon, because she is a younger midwife, and I honestly wholeheartedly believe, and no offence to any older midwives, that had I had an older midwife, they would have been more factual and more like, no, you have to do this in order for X to happen, and Y has to happen for X to happen. And Shannon was really like open to me saying, I don't want the bed in there. And she didn't say, well, what if you need to lie down? I said, I don't want it. I don't want this in there. I don't want to have the oxytocin drip. Yeah. She was very like open-minded to letting my birth be my birth, instead of saying, no, the system wants you to birth this way, and these are five steps you have to take in order to have said outcome. So I honestly have her to thank for that, because otherwise, really, I don't know, I might have been forced into something else.
Yeah, I mean, you should never have had that experience in the first place. But I think something that I want to mention, just because you talked about kind of you know, making, you know, your decisions were more informed the second time round. Mm. I want to touch on something about risk. So often we're told, and as you told us in your story, you know, about, you know, there was a lot of mention of stillbirth and, oh, you know, whatever else comes with that. All a woman needs to hear to do anything that they're told is stillbirth, because nobody wants to birth a dead baby, like ever, right? Yeah. And, so at that point, you become very like, oh my God, okay, I'll do whatever, because of course I don't want that to happen. So you succumb and you give in and you do that. And a lot of the time, if you ask your medical provider, like, well, okay, well, what's the actual risk of that then? Mm. Like, give me the actual risk.
Yeah.
You could be talking, so, you know, I'm not going to talk about stillbirth, that risk, because that's a wider topic. But for example, like you talked about your waters breaking.
Yeah.
Well, they say that the risk of infection doubles every, you know, I think 24 hours.
Yeah.
Well, what does it double to and from then? Because when you say the risk of infection doubles, it's like, oh my gosh, like doubles.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Shit, I better, like, shit, I'm going to have to go and have this induction. Like, it doubles every 24 hours. Like,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so what's the actual risk? Okay, it's 2%. So that means in 24 hours, it's going to be 4%. Mm. And in the 24 hours after that, it's going to be 8%. Mm. Like, I'm going to stop there before I screw up the math. But you get my drift, right?
Yeah, of course.
So it's actually then you're able, when you know the actual percentage, you're able to make an informed decision. Okay, well, I would then, if my waters then haven't broken over the next 3 days, then I'll consider what my next steps are. But when they're saying doubles, you're not making an informed decision on that. Right. And that's where I think we let women down, and things like this is important for us to, you know, we've only scratched the surface on this, I think that's an important thing, is like, let's quantify risk, because risk will mean different things to different people. For some people, that 2% risk might be enough to say, no, I'm not happy with that, and I would like to accept the induction, or I'd like to do this or that. Totally fine. That is your prerogative, but at least you've made the decision. For some people, they may choose to wait 3 or 4 days and they'd be fine, because let's not forget about the risk that is carried when we are having vaginal examinations or sweeps or things like that. That carries infection risk.
Yeah, which I hadn't have even thought of until you'd put that thought in my mind. I was like, yeah, sweep, do it. I hadn't actually, it sounds silly, I hadn't thought about what the risk is of letting somebody's bare hand, you know, do what they need to do.
Didn't it is somebody's fingers going in your vagina. Yeah. It carries a risk. If you're having then, you know, multiple sweeps, is the risk of infection discussed with you at that point?
Yeah.
I imagine from what I've heard through the women I've worked with, that's not discussed.
Mm-mm.
You know, they can also prematurely rupture your membranes. They can break your waters during that. Well, then they're going to put you on a timeline and we're going to lead to the conversation that we just had. So we really have to be mindful and, you know, it's really hard as a first-time mum.
Yeah.
It's really hard. So none of this isn't the blame is not on the mum.
There's no wrong or right answer, women, really. Whatever. You just have to do what you feel.
Women are being let down, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And your stories, while I'm obviously so happy that the birth went so much better with Renee, and I know you took a lot from your first birth too, I don't feel like we should have to go through these experiences, you know, which we do. And this is why, and I know it's easy for me to say to an extent, but like I really can see the power of having a doula. And I know that is not something that everybody can afford, but there are things like the Doula Access Fund, which you can look into because midwives just do not have the time.
Yeah.
They do not have the time in the system that we work with to give you the care that we need. There will always be those gems, but there will also be many that are just, do you know what? They're just broken.
Yeah.
They're broken from the system. It's not that they're bad people.
They're just tired.
And they are so used to going through the motions and, you know, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's a very tough one and so much more that could be discussed in that. But Khadija, thank you so much for sharing this,
welcome.
You know, the kind of, I guess the mindset and, you know, you touched on the things that you went through in each of the births and how that led to ultimately, you know, different outcomes and different, I guess, level of satisfaction from your birth.
Yeah.
But just to kind of finish up, what is, I guess, with all of that in mind, what is, you know, the one thing you would either say, like a nugget of knowledge that you want to pass on, or a tip or something that you would say to first time mums, given you have experienced what you have experienced?
It's a hard one. I think you've just got to be, do you know what, I read a different book this time round. I read Hypnobirthing, The Practical Ways to Birth by Siobhan Miller. Mm-hmm. I think that's the title. If not, I will link it on our Instagram or share it somewhere. And that book really informed me of how I can stand up for myself and how it's okay to stand up for yourself and how, you know, it's got this rule of like, what's the risks? What's the time frame? What's going to happen next? And if you take a step back and sort of think, okay, if I give myself a minute, these are the eventualities, however, nobody's going to die if I ask for 5 more minutes or I'm not going to lose a limb if I ask for, or I am. And if I am going to lose a limb, you know, what steps do I want to take in order to do that? So I would really recommend reading that book. I would really recommend asking questions. Why do you need to weigh me? Like you said in the episode before, what positive does that have to my pregnancy apart from, you know, giving me a complex that I've now gained an extra 2 pounds? And I would also recommend taking a toddler's buggy fan into a delivery room with you, because that toddler buggy fan literally was the difference between me taking another paracetamol and not. That fan, oh my God, I asked on my Instagram for hospital bag tips, and that fan was the gold of all golds. So that and hiring a TENS machine. You can hire TENS machines. I'll share the link in our show notes for next to no money. And it was, again, my only form of pain relief both times around. And I would highly recommend.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think
thanks so much for sharing that. I think a lot of people are going to resonate. So, I've loved the conversation.
Thank you very much. So, as always, if you have listened whilst you were in the bath, I hope you've had a nice soak and you've put hot water in, you're not turned into a shriveled prune. If you've been walking around the park, please keep on walking. If you're listening in the car with your children, I hope they've enjoyed it and they're maybe stopped screaming. And if you're thinking about having a baby or if you're about to have a baby, I wish you all the best of luck.
Yeah, thank you so much, Khadija, for sharing that. And yeah, we'd love to hear your feedback on this episode. Any questions or things that have come up for you, do let us know.
Thanks
and we'll see you again next week for episode 5. 5.
Just bad story.
Yeah. All right. Story. So yeah, can't wait for that.
See you later, everyone.
See you later.
Bye.